Hello, you're listening to Living Alone Together. I am your only host, Yan. So, some of you may remember that in the previous episode, I mentioned that I wanted to go on a longer vacation in terms of podcasting and just record something in May. But I can't control myself. I sort of accumulated a lot of things to say in the past 2 weeks. So I've decided to do one today. And I actually listed like 15 things to say today. Who knows? Maybe it'll just be like a 20-minute podcast. Anyway, the first thing is just that I've been feeling very, very depressed today. And let me explain the term depressed in my context. So I just feel like I didn't care about myself at all. And so typically when I'm on the train, when I'm commuting, whatever it is, I would listen to my music or podcast and then scroll my phone and or if it's a better day, I might be reading and just be completely in my own world. But today I just feel like I couldn't absorb any of that stuff. Like the podcast just became this white noise in the background, and I wasn't really listening to it, and I even feel like just not listening to it at all, and just having nothing in my ears, which is a very rare thing for me. So, and this is all very organic, it's just how I felt. And then instead of just focusing on what's on, like, on my mind or on my phone, I was just looking around, and then it made me all very more depressed. So, for example, I saw that about 75% of the people were wearing some sort of earbuds or headphones, and then you just feel like, what is this shit? Like, it's just very dystopian. It really is dystopian. And then I even looked closely. Well, okay, I didn't do it intentionally. I was just standing close to them, and I saw that, okay, from what I can tell, these earbuds are like 200 quid or something like that, right? And you're just like, oh my god, people spend all that money to isolate themselves from the rest of the world, which is totally fine, which I understand, but it's just my train of thought was completely on other people. And I was even looking into other people's phones, which is probably not the nicest thing, but who cares. And then this guy sitting in front of me, he was actually on Spotify looking for his next song, and then the woman beside me was googling something, and I couldn't read what she was googling. And then the lady across me, so the train had seats that were facing each other, so I saw her, like, she wasn't listening to anything, she was talking to her baby, who was about probably 1 or 2 years old, who could speak but not so well. And then she was like, okay, mommy's gonna get some water right now, in this very posh accent. And then she then took out a bottle of water and started to feed the baby the water, and then herself some water. And then every action she took, she would narrate it out loud, most likely to the baby. And then even that feel dystopian, because I just feel like, oh my god, like this must be some sort of motherhood thing. Like, you probably learned this from your peers, like peer mothers or peer fathers, and you probably collectively decided that this is a good method for rearing your child. Like, not literally having this discussion with your friends, but just I imagine that she might have heard it from someone that it's good to be speaking to your child all the time so that they learn how to speak faster, right? Or it might be something she read, and or it could be completely organic, which is also depressing in another way, because it meant that like speaking, like this very, this very artificial thing of language, is just forced upon the kids, like so casually. I don't know what it was. It was just like a really eerie day for me, where I was just so distracted and I just couldn't think about like the stuff I usually do think about, and I couldn't focus on my music or my podcast, and I was just, and in a way I was seeking distraction. I was trying to see like what my surroundings were, and I was looking into, you know, the bushes on the sidewalk and just trying to see if there's some trash or something. Like, it was just, my mind was just not the same as before, as usual, right? So I call this feeling depression because it was just a feeling really of not being there. It was just like you were there, but you just feel like you don't belong there, and you feel like it's very dystopian, and yet you know you cannot escape that kind of that world. And that's why I think it counts as feeling depressed. Like, that's the closest word I can think of. In fact, it was so weird, the feeling that I looked up signs of depression, like clinical depression, and I actually had quite a few things. Like, how I felt actually matched a bunch of things on the depression list, except that it was only for like 2 or 3 hours. It wasn't for 2 weeks or so. Like, I think clinically you have to feel all of these things for probably more than 2 or 3 weeks, and there needs to be some actual tangible effects on your life, as in you sleep too much, you eat too much or too little, whatever. For me, none of this happened, so it was not, it's definitely not clinical depression, but I sort of got like a dose of a lot of things on the list in the time span of maybe 4 or 5 hours, and that's enough for me. So what happened, what cured this thing, was that I went for a run for like 30 minutes or so, and it just magically disappeared. Like, the feeling just disappeared. So if I could, my only advice to anyone is just go run when you don't feel like doing anything else. Just go run, because it's gonna bring some sort of magic. Like, it, I don't know, maybe it's just the chemicals working or whatever it could be. It's just good. So now I'm feeling okay again. And in fact, I think it was after the running that I decided that I wanted to talk to you guys. So okay, I sort of cleared 4 or 5 things on my list to talk about today. All right. A semi-big thing on the list is this very important new idea. Please bear with me, it's a bit funny, but basically I've discovered that afternoon is the absolute worst time of the day. And by afternoon, I mean sometime between 1 and 5 p.m. So, you know how people would say things like a morning person or a night person, which means like you probably do things a lot better in the morning or at night, or you feel a lot better in one of those times. And I think that's just the wrong way to frame things. I think instead of highlighting the good times of the day, it's more productive or more effective or useful to highlight the worst time of the day. And for me, like, the night and day person description never really felt right, because I don't really need to know when I work best or what time I like the best. Like, it's just, if it's something you like, you're gonna look forward to it, so it's all right. The problem is with the unnamed blue times. For me, it was definitely the afternoon, so blue hours, 1 to 5 p.m. And let me explain this. This sounds trivial, but it's very, very important. And so what happens is that in the morning, let's say 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, or earlier than that, whatever, it's absolutely fresh, right? You could eat whatever you want. You can make yourself some tea. You feel like, okay, you can get dressed, you can go out and you put on your makeup, whatever it is, like everything is just beginning in the day, in the morning, right? And then the morning quickly goes away because typically it's like 8 to 12 o'clock, right? It's just like, it goes on, it goes very, very fast somehow, I think, the morning, just because of like how many things you cram into the morning and everything is like the first time that day. So I guess like, if you break it down, they mean a lot more in the day. If like one, if the full day is like your whole life, then the morning corresponds to your childhood, right? So everything just feels fresh, like it's the first experience for everything. It's the first time experience for everything, right? And then comes noon, and noon is great. Noon is when you can eat like a bigger meal, something like that. And if you work in office, that's your lunch break, so obviously it's a great time. And you've sort of made it, you like, it's not actually true, but you feel like you've made it halfway through the day, even though it might actually just have been 3 or 4 hours, so you still have a long way to go until you go to bed. But the very, like, the very name, noon, feels like a milestone on its own. So noon is okay. Noon is all very good. Suddenly it goes downhill. It's like 1 to 5 p.m. is when I guess it corresponds to adulthood of your life, where you just feel like you cannot take a break this time. Like, it's not the time for relaxing completely yet. And it's not 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. whenever you get off work. It still feels quite distant. Like, it's, there's like a long way to go until 5 p.m. So 1 o'clock, that's how you feel. You're like, oh my God, lunch break is over. You have to start like working again. And then 1 o'clock is like semi-safe zone. But then when it comes 2 o'clock, 2 o'clock is when you actually feel like, even if you're a friend or someone who typically enjoys a long, long lunch, 2 o'clock is still when you feel like, okay, it's no longer in the ballpark of the noon period. It's really officially a different era, or like a different phase of life, or a different phase in the day. And 2 o'clock is when that cutoff sort of is. And yet it's still sufficiently close to the noon period that it feels a little bit too soon to get that cup of coffee or that cup of tea, right? So 2 o'clock is just, and also it's probably the time when you feel like taking a nap. So 2 o'clock is just, it's just this time of the day where it feels like a big stretch, like it just never ends. And then suppose miraculously you escaped 2 o'clock, right? Miraculously you're at 3 o'clock, and that's even worse than 2 o'clock, because this is when it feels like you should go home already if you're working full time. And it's also the period when kids start to go home if they're at school. So 3 o'clock is when there are signs that the day is closer to an end. But in reality, there's still a good 2 hours or 3 hours until your day job is done, right? And so that is effectively one or two movies. You can fit one or two movies between 3 o'clock and when you can leave the office. And or if you don't work in an office, that's also one or two movies until you could get your dinner. So, and then 3 o'clock is just, it doesn't feel, and also it's also 3 hours since you had your previous meal. So I feel like it's like the time when you most want to have some sort of afternoon tea, right? And so 3 o'clock is just, it's just like a meaningless, empty period. like, you're already filled for the day. It's not like there's some urgency in getting food. And yet you can still see ahead, and you know that, yes, there are signs that some things are ending in that day, but most of the shops, most of the coffee shops, they don't close until 4 o'clock. So you sort of like, you understand that business is still on at 3 o'clock, right? So that could be draining. Okay. And then suppose you made it to 4 o'clock. Oh my God. And then 4 o'clock is the time when, if it's in the right season, then the sun may start to shift a little bit, and you may see like a sunset, maybe in some countries. 4 o'clock, it might start getting dark. So then you actually have the feeling that it's approaching night. Or if it's in the summer or spring, like now, 4 o'clock is when, okay, you've resisted the urge to get that cup of tea or coffee at 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock, and you feel like, okay, you've already sort of processed that kind of thinking in the back of your head, and you decide to get up for the cup of tea. And then just about when you're gonna like pour that cup of tea, you think, oh my God, like, what if I have this cup of tea and I cannot fall asleep well tonight? Because 4 o'clock is like dangerous hours where it feels like sun setting, it feels like dinner is coming, so it's probably not good to have a snack that hour. It also feels like it's just a little bit too late to have that cup of tea, but you already missed that cup of tea at 2 or 3 o'clock for various reasons, because you're worried about different things. So 4 o'clock is when it's just like a period of disappointment. Like, yes, you feel like you can finally see the end of the day job time, right? Like, it's almost 5 o'clock, but you're still there. So for some reason, you're still there, and it's just, everything is just crumbling down. And then finally, if you've made it to 5 o'clock, finally the worst time of the day is over. Because 5 o'clock, typically it means that your work is done, you can go home, and then it's probably gonna be dark already, and you could enjoy the night, and the night is all yours, and you can cook dinner. You can, for me, 5 to 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock at night is the best time of the day, because the work is done, and even if you're not productive that day, who cares? Officially, it's the end of the day for your job. You can make some nice dinner. You can have a long dinner until 8 or 9 o'clock. And then after 9 o'clock, it's like movie time, whatever. You can talk on the phone. It's nice. It's great. And also 5 o'clock is when officially you've made it through more than half of the day, right? So see, that's why afternoon, like from 1 to 5 o'clock, is just the worst time of the day, because it feels like you must be working towards something in these hours. It's not the time for eating, it's not the time for tea, even though that's the only thing you can think about. It's not the time for relaxing, it's not the time for anything except for like doing something. Like, you actually have to do something that is semi-productive or effective or useful. Which is why I have decided that afternoon is the officially the worst time of the day, and I'll call it afternoon blues. Now, why is this theory important? It's completely non-trivial. It's because if we think about things like a morning person, a night person, it's not useful at all. Because if you're a morning person or a night person, you naturally look forward to these times. Like, you look forward for night to come, you look forward for the new day, for the morning routine, whatever it is that you do, which I don't buy into, but, you know, people do that. It's not helpful. So what we have to solve is actually to identify the weaknesses of the day. And for me, it's the personal blues. For me, it's the afternoon blues. And this has a very good parallel to the to PMS. So for those of you who are girls or women or who get periods, you know, it still happens to me after so many years of having my period, but it's like 1 or 2 days before my period, you get this very, very down, depressed feeling, and you don't know where that is, it's coming from, and you don't know the source of it, and you just feel very, very not yourself until you see your period, and then you understand that, oh, it was the period all along, it was just PMS, and then you feel so stupid for feeling, for going into that rabbit hole, whatever it is that you're feeling in your depressed 1 or 2 days before the period. So when you identify it as PMS and you see the period coming, then you understand it wasn't you, it was just the time of the month. And I think it's the same thing as the afternoon blues. Like, now that I identified the afternoon blues, I can sort of prepare for it. Like, for example, I would know that, okay, every time, every 1 o'clock of the day, I would start to get this very nasty feeling that, oh my God, it's like, it's only just 4 hours, but it feels like forever. It's never gonna end. And you feel like you don't know how to deal with these hours, right? I think it's very, very useful to give it a name, to give it a label, just like PMS, so that you get prepped for it. So instead of like seeing the period and getting relieved, I think it's actually better to sort of predict when your PMS is gonna happen, so that when it does happen, like, you can't avoid it, but it still happens every month, but at least you feel better. Like, you wouldn't freak out and feel like dying really for like the 2 days that it does happen, right? So the same thing, it's just that unfortunately the afternoon, capital T, capital A, comes every single day. So, but for me personally, I've identified the afternoon blues 1 week ago, and since then I've been more prepped for this time of the day. So for example, I would just go get that cup of tea when the afternoon comes. Like, it's just a treat for the afternoon. I would just go get that snack in the afternoon and like just dismiss any doubts about having a snack in that period. It's fine, just do it, like, whatever makes you happier. And I think it's really, really useful to identify the worst time of the day for yourself, maybe. Just like, for me it's afternoon, maybe for you it's a night, whatever, but I would suggest that afternoon blues is definitely I would predict boldly that it's probably a global phenomenon. Alrighty, so this was a very big topic of the day. Now, moving on to the next point. So, the main topic of the day is actually Adobe Illustrator. So, I've been playing with this program for a little bit. And by a little bit, I mean 2 days exactly. And I've had so much to talk about. So, I subscribed to Adobe Clouds because I wanted to design a logo. And obviously you could hire someone to do it, or you could go online and search for stock images, whatever, but I don't want to do that. I wanted to use this chance to learn a little bit of Adobe stuff, right? You just feel like it might be useful in the future. So I already paid 1 month subscription. I'll see how it goes. The thing is, I learned a lot already in the 2 days that this happened. So initially I was going to just go like completely freestyle. So just like play and tweak with the program and see what happens. But it was awfully difficult. So I decided to go for a tutorial and search online a little bit about the logic of Adobe Illustrator and pretty much any kind of logo designer applications. And it turns out that it's actually it uses a different kind of logic from normal drawing. So typically if you produce like an image which is .jpg or png kind of file, then what happens is that everything is sort of fixed. They're glued together in a very specific orientation, and the file is not very flexible. So if you enlarge the image or make it small or make it smaller or whatever you do with the image, all the things are going to move together. All the elements are going to move together in a very
standard way. Like, it's always, they're always going to do the same thing. Like, because the image was perhaps just saved for that 10 times 10 pixel, whatever it is, right? And so it's not very flexible and it gets distorted, it gets pixelated, and it's only useful for that one time purpose, really. But then when it comes to Adobe Illustrator or any kind of what's called vector art program, the logic is very different, and I find it fascinating. So instead of like a free form drawing, they encourage the formation of images via elements or shapes. And so initially, I feel like the learning curve is a bit high because you have to relearn the logic of drawing. It's no longer like a free form thing. Rather, like, it's not like one big glue of stuff. It's not like a big canvas and you just put things on it. It's like, and instead of like drawing intuitively, you kind of have to pick up different shapes and different preset elements in the program. So you have to perceive your any image you have as ultimately a formation of lines and dots and shapes, instead of like one big thing. It's actually a combination of a bunch of elements that ultimately are the same universally. So no matter who the painter is, no matter what the painting looks like, for example, ultimately you have to see them as a variation of shapes. So even though you may have like a heart in your mind, it's actually not a heart. It's actually a bunch of like tiny circles or tiny squares together, right? If you like zoom in big enough, the smooth curve is actually just you can consider them like refined squares or something like that. Like, it's just an analogy. I don't know it too well, but that's how I perceive it. So it was very interesting. So if that, and the reason for that is just that in what is called the vector art, the purpose of it is to reproduce the art in as many ways as possible. So instead of distorting the image, if you zoom in, if you like print it out in a different kind of, on a different kind of surface, the aim is for the elements to be stuck together in the same way, and to be more flexible because the computer now reads the elements instead of like a big chunk of image, right? So in that way it can reinterpret the elements and just scale them by the proportion, like to the right proportions, right? So a good example is I was reading on Reddit. So on Reddit there's this subreddit called Logo Design, I think. And like one of the highest rated posts is on the McDonald's logo. So like, it's very easy to think that, all right, you know, I'm just gonna, if I want to reproduce this image, the idea is just to use like a freeform drawing of an M and then color it yellow and then color the background red, right? That's what the McDonald's logo looks like. But based on the Illustrator logic, it's not that at all. It's not like an M with a back on a red background. It's actually, the M is actually it actually consists of many like straight lines of squares and then cutting the edges off so that it becomes a curve. And like it actually happens, it becomes that kind of M, that very particular M, after many iterations of like tweaking the squares and like trimming things off. So it's not like a one line where you just like you would writing down the letter M. It's actually going from like a big yellow thing, cutting off the edges slowly until you're left with the exact curvature of that particular M, and then combining it with a red background, right? So like the logic is completely different. Like it's more about the build blocks than the than one big huge chunk of thing. So So in other words, the Illustrator was not easy for me because of the logic, right? And then I was amazed. I was thinking this thing might actually be very similar to coding, because the purpose of coding is to be able to use this very same building blocks to reproduce, well, to create like infinite things from the very simple building blocks of codes, right? It's you have to go from the bottom up rather than from the top down, right? I don't know how to describe it. And so in a way, when I was doing Illustrator, it was like anti-intuitive, at least because, well, I guess it's because I haven't done it too long. Like, it's not my profession. I was just starting to go through some tutorials. But it was quite anti-intuitive and just exactly how I felt when I was learning a little bit of coding. And it was not my thing. But Illustrator was fun. Like, it was not that bad. But it's just, it's like a whole new world. And I highly recommend it to anyone who wants to have some fun and just download the program, play with it. And yeah, it's kind of interesting. But it also got me a little bit depressed, because then you realize, oh shit, like, graphic design is like a whole another field, and you feel so inadequate that there are some people out there who actually learn this professionally, and how dare you try to like imitate what they're doing. I don't know, it's like a mixed feeling. And then there's this interesting thing, which is on the subreddit logo design. So as you know, Redditors are typically quite critical of just everything, and the logo design subreddit is not very popular, as in, like, most of the posts are just, they're just gonna get like zero upvotes, and the best ones get about 50 or 70 upvotes. And so I took a look, and then some people, like, most people just post their logo designs and they ask for feedback. And then there was one that looked like very, very detailed, and just because I think a lot of people are going for modern, sleek, very minimalistic designs. But then this one stood out because it was very, very fancy and complicated. And I clicked into that post, and then apparently it turns out this is AI design. It was drawn completely by AI, and like, people didn't like it on Reddit because these mostly are probably like professionals and they could recognize it at first glance. And then I started noticing how AI art looks like. They have this distinct AI feel, and then like, the more you see, the more you sort of see the pattern, and you sort of, it gets very, very depressing because they're just all very similar. And yet, once you recognize the pattern, once you see that, you cannot unsee it. And then you go into the real world and you look around, and occasionally you spot it in the real world. You see that, okay, these people, they probably grab this logo from like a stock image website, and these stock images probably were produced by AI, or they were just, yeah, most likely by AI. And I would say that sad is the wrong word. Both are the very right word to describe this phenomenon, because I know that I cannot reproduce that AI image from Adobe Illustrator, no matter how good I get. And I also know that it's actually objectively not bad. Like, it's bad only because you are, you know that it's AI, and then you think it's bad. But if you didn't know it was AI, you probably wouldn't think it was a bad image on its own, right? And that's a scary thing, and that's something I guess that contributed to the depression I was feeling earlier today, about just like, it doesn't really matter what I'm thinking and what I'm doing. Like, an AI is gonna eventually do better than me. Like, they're gonna be better. They already are more eloquent than I am. Like, suppose I feed into like ChatGPT and ask them to do like a script for this podcast,
and I just read it off, then maybe this episode would have been better than what I'm doing right now. And so it's just, I wouldn't say it's scary. I wouldn't even say it's alarming or anything. For me, it's just pure sad, because it's just, you know this is happening. You know this is the reality. And I just feel like, okay, of course, people have been talking about this, like, who cannot be replaced by AI. And I feel like the question isn't what AI can or can do. I think it's what people value in the world. So if it's a job that they believe is not going to cause significant, like, harm if it's done wrongly, then fine, like, let an AI do it. So I would suspect that things like translation, like graphic design, like things that are not that is okay when there's some variation or when it's not so accurate, then I suppose, like, people don't mind that an AI is doing it. And even things that would cost lives, like self-driving cars and like autopilot or whatever it is, like, they are also AIs are actually quite reliable, I suppose. So that's the thing. Like, I'm suddenly feeling like, what's the whole point of going to school in the first place? And I went in this rabbit hole of thinking about how much time I spent just learning the quote-unquote knowledge in high school and university. What's the point of reading all of this stuff, taking notes on this stuff, when, first of all, it's got nothing to do with my life right now, and second of all, like, there's already, like, a giant ass database out there that is going to recall more accurately than I ever can. And it's just the whole thought, it's just depressing, man. It's just depressing. And I think that was clearly manifested in graphic design, because you go online and you look at all of these images and you don't know which ones are AI. Like, okay, most still you can sort of gauge which ones are AI produced, but it's just the sheer work that an AI can do, the very fact that they can create all of these things, it's just so very depressing. I imagine it must be even more for the actual graphic designers. And then I suddenly recall that, and this has to do with the whole theme of this podcast, I think, which is about just not polishing anything. So I remember when I was in elementary school, the school computers, they only had Microsoft Paint, the program. Somehow it got deleted, right? Microsoft doesn't want us to use that. And some, okay, you can still find a web version of it, but it's just, I miss that thing. Like, it's so straightforward. It's very straightforward, and it's no frills. It's just easy to do. And yes, the outcome is so bad, but I think that is the very beauty of it. Like, a work produced by using only Microsoft Paint is great today, I think, because it stands out. It's not smooth. It's very, like, high friction. It's low effort, high friction. And that's the thing I've been thinking about. Like, today we are pursuing, like, maybe HD contents, highly processed YouTube video. Like, the amateurs are suddenly no longer amateurs. They're all secretly professionals. People are aspiring to be YouTubers. TV programs are highly, highly processed. And everything is just super polished, and the world has seemingly all the tools that you can find for anyone to become a professional videographer, photographer, whatever it is, right? And then everyone has a really good phone in their hands, and everything, like, the standards of digital media, let's say, are just so high now, because technology, the technology is just so good. And suddenly it's so rare to see anything that is quote unquote objectively bad, as in, let's say 480p videos are no longer acceptable. Graphic designers will not use Microsoft Paint. All of this very low entry stuff is just disappearing, right? And yet I find that occasionally, if you come across one of these things online, they're the most original, right? The ugly memes are very original. Whereas like AI memes are not good yet because they're just very, very smooth, as in visually very smooth, and that's not how memes work. And AI art has this feel to it because it aims for some sort of literal and metaphorical smoothness. Like there's going to be shadows, there's going to be lights, and things are going to appear three-dimensional, smooth, more or less, right? So I think that's it. Like, I found this new value in life by counteracting AI stuff, and AI in the literal AI way sense, but also just the idea of the smooth, perfect life. And I feel like I'm appreciating that a lot more, like the handcrafted things or like the unprofessional amateurism. That there's some beauty in that that I think is really, really lost, and I don't want it to be completely lost right now. So for my personal life philosophy, this very badly produced podcast is a great exhibit of this human flaw. Like I just like to keep producing things that are very raw, that are not edited, and that are just not professional, and that are quite bad, to be honest. I think I get some sort of joy in doing this because it's bad, and I don't want to become better. I don't want to become a professional. I don't want like a big following. I wanted to keep it low key, niche, and just very, very frictional, high friction, like very pixelated in many senses of the word. But not just for this podcast. I feel like from now on, like any kind of logo, image, whatever I'm using, whatever I'm doing, I feel like I'm just gonna go for like the 1998 Windows XP kind of aesthetics. And this is something that is very difficult to do because I am bombarded by a lot of highly processed visuals on Instagram, just in daily life, right? Like the actual advertisements you see when you're walking outside, like all of these are highly processed. All of these are highly thought, highly professional works, right? And I'm just gonna go for the anti-professional. If I go to a bookstore, I'll aim for the book that has a very ugly, not my type kind of book design, book cover. So not the modern kind of thing, but just like the book cover has to be bad before I would read it, right? I don't know. I feel like this is like a little thing I want to pursue, not pursue, but look for in my daily life. Because it's now easier to be perfect than to be non-perfect. It's easier to find the right tools for being a little bit closer to be like a professional, when in reality most of the things don't have to be that good. Like, just eat very bad food, it's fine. It doesn't have to taste good. Dress very ugly, that's fine. Like, go for the low resolution, high friction kind of life. And I feel like that is like the new thing I'm trying to do. Although, yeah, okay, there are still things in my room that I want to improve on. So, and this is another part of the thing, and this is the whole very ironic thing. Like, the idea of the high friction product is that it's actually the result of a low friction thing. Like, anyone could use Microsoft Paint, whereas the Illustrator is a lot more difficult than Microsoft Paint, right? And so Microsoft Paint is a low friction thing, but the result of that is a high friction, highly pixelated thing. So that's kind of ironic. And
And I think that's also the thing with DIY stuff or like the more manual mechanical stuff. So like even if you start with a bicycle and you think, huh, I could just go for with a bicycle. I don't need a car. Okay. The result is that you would end up purchasing a lot of gears that make you the same as any other bicycle like cyclist. By that I mean that I feel like, and this is kind of inevitable for me at least. For example, I when it comes to bicycles, you just think, okay, I'll just get any old secondhand bike. But then maybe one day you accidentally went on this, maybe you borrow someone's bike that's a lot better than yours and it's not secondhand, it's like an actual proper road bike, and you realize, oh my god, things could be so much better, right? It's sort of like the 480p video used to be just fine until suddenly you see the high definition video and then you're like, you can't go back anymore. And the bicycle thing's the same, right? You suddenly realize, yes, the most basic one works, but then like humans just have this tendency to go for like the higher end thing, the smoother thing. And in my experience, I like got this cycling clock. I got like, I started adding a bunch of gears to the bicycle, and it's just all very like a natural progression. It's not like I'm actively thinking hard about the end product that my bicycle would become. No, it's like a gradual process. Like suddenly I just keep improving in many ways when it comes to bicycle. So I think this is just like a natural thing in human life. Like it's just, we can't go back to 480p. I don't know. And so I think it's gonna be hard work if I want to pursue the 480p in so many areas of life, because I think eventually it's gonna fail. Like I'm gonna fail. Like I'm gonna realize that no, actually I do want the good stuff. I do want the smooth stuff. I want a smooth experience, right? But I do miss the Microsoft Paint aesthetic so much for so many things in my life. So I don't know how to process this, but I think that's sort of the thing I've been thinking about recently. Another example is like recipes, right? You would think that like, what's the big deal with like a good old carbonara recipe? Like, why does it have to go that way? And it's just because it's been it's tested recipe. Like this kind of mayonnaise and bacon and everything mixed together, it's just so good. Or maybe for cocktails as well, like these recipes work while they're still here. They've survived evolution because that's the stuff that's good, right? It's the good stuff that survives, I think. And there's almost like no workaround. Like if you try to be creative, you try to be raw, and you try to go for the 480p effect, the end result is just something that is just not as good as the well-established path or like the smooth path. I don't know. Like I have to like try to like think this through a little bit more. But that's what I'm trying to get to. It's just that it's very difficult to actually go for the 480p life philosophy, right? Like in the end, you're gonna aim for Illustrator rather than the open source program or the Microsoft Paint, right? And even if there is some sort of brands that would seem to be not so processed, or some sort of YouTuber or influencer who sort of promote this no makeup look in the metaphorical way, or someone who would be try to be real in whatever way, in whatever sense of the word real, like all these things that seem unpolished, in the end they do require, you realize that they do require a lot of like thought, like the no makeup look, right? So I really don't know. Like I just want to live more really. I want to live in a more real way and just be actually comfortable with the 480p resolution, right? Anyway, that's about it for today. I'm getting a little bit tired because I actually re-recorded many times today. And yeah, it's time to do other things today. So I'm going to say goodbye and I'll see you probably in May. Okay, that's it. Bye.